Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Guns and Yellow Ribbons. I'm afraid that Fergus is away getting his makeup and hair done tonight. So you're stuck with me, Ilzy, and my two good mates, Alex and Dan. Which obviously, this is the preview show, but we've got much more important things to talk about tonight, haven't we? So here we go. Enjoy the show.
Get ready for the world's greatest Arsenal podcast. Welcome to another podcast by Guns and Yellow Ribbons. Enjoy the show.
Well, hello, welcome everybody. We've got a replacement in for Fergus, as you can probably see. I'm not sure how this is going to go. Alex is going to lead the way. I'm going to press all the buttons. If we both get it right, then we'll be all right. If we don't get it right, then we might disappear, but hang around because we'll probably come back again. We're going to talk about the games coming up this weekend, but obviously Arsenal aren't playing, so we'll just brush over them. But we've got to talk about the amazing night on Tuesday night at home to Porto. I unfortunately wasn't there. Dan and Alex were. So I'm going to hand you over to Alex. I think Alex is going to start off by telling us about the journey because he comes over just for a day to watch the Arsenal and then we'll get stuck into talking about the game. So how was your day, Alex?
My day was amazing, mate. I flew over Tuesday midday with my sister and on a packed plane with a lot of Danish gooners and we got in the mood early and got some Jaeger bombs in the airport. And then we arrived early in the stadium with Dan and the other usual faces and started building the atmosphere. But I think maybe we can play a video to the audience and sort of get them in the mood and give them a little teaser of what's to come.
Yeah, if I can remember. Oh, no, who's this bloke just shot in the background here?
We've got
He's ruining our podcast.
Fortunately, we can't see him. Let's play this video, Alex.
Yeah. Watch me go. I'll be running circles around you sooner than you know.
A little love center and I'm out of tune. Just kicking this gal on the avenue. But I'm alright. It's easy once you know how it's done. You can't stop now, it's already begun. Alex,
yes, mate.
Just seeing that, it's hard to concentrate with that big toothy grin up in the top corner. Isn't it? But just seeing that, mate, just reminded me of penalty shootouts. If anyone out there hasn't experienced a penalty shootout live, now it's the biggest turnaround every couple of seconds. Tension, joy, tension, joy, tension, sadness, tension, joy. It is amazing, the penalty shootouts. I hope we never have to go through another one again, but. What a night, eh, boys? What a night, Alex.
Yeah, I think that was the dreaded thing. But to be honest, like speaking to the other people in the concourse going into the game, I think a lot of us was confident about the game and probably didn't think about the penalty shootout. I think most of us thought we'd get it done in the 90 minutes. Trev, what was your thoughts going into the game about the Porto game?
Alex, I'm finding it hard to concentrate in a minute. Before I answer that question, Alex, let's just bring him in. Can you hear us, Ferg?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, we can. Yeah, yeah. How's it going, mate? How are you doing?
We're on Whiskey Sours. Been on the beer since about 4 o'clock this afternoon. And I done a 23-hour stint yesterday, and that was following how little sleep did we have on whatever. I don't know what day it is. I don't know where I am or what I'm doing, but I just had to make sure that ginger beards weren't misrepresented by Dan's depiction of ginger-beard people, because gingers have rights, you know.
You have been on the whiskey, haven't you? You have been on the whiskey.
I'm done.
I didn't understand a word of that.
I don't know about you, Trev, but I prefer the other Fergus. He talks more. He's less annoying.
Careful with sticking back in, Dan. Ferg, just listen, though, while you still got a bit of common sense about you, you had 2.5 hours sleep. Was it worth it for that game at the Emirates? Was it worth
it? It was absolutely brilliant. Look, that's the second penalty shootout I've seen at the Emirates. The last one we lost in the Europa League against Sporting last season. And I don't know, me and Dan looked really, really nervous. I've seen some photos of me and Dan, and it wasn't pleasant. I nearly got sick in my mouth at points. But that feeling afterwards was unreal. And Alex was so excited in the car afterwards that all I was concentrating about was trying to get to sleep. And I was trying to wind myself down, and Alex was talking and talking and talking.
I was yapping.
Yeah, so that was it was really good. Guys, I'm going to leave you carry on. You can put the leprechaun back in. And I'm going to bid you farewell. And good luck, Trev, Alex, and whoever the smiley guy with the hat is and the ginger beard.
Have a great day.
Thank you, mate. Take care.
Take it easy, boys.
Nice to see you.
Up the arsehole. Fuck the Spurs.
Especially the back of you. Right, how do we get... that's it. Let's put him back in. Let's sort this out. Because we've got to have... That's it. Right, Alex, we can get on and talk some common sense now, mate. I forgot the question you asked me, though, pal.
You've done well with the button so far. Let's keep it going.
Yeah.
So the question asked was, going into the game, I was quite confident, and a lot of the people I spoke to was quite confident. How was your confidence levels going into the game?
Well, do you remember what I said, mate? I didn't share people's confidence, did I? I thought we would win, but I didn't think it would be as easy as a lot of people thought it would be. Strangely enough, I turned out right if you take it in that context, but I thought the game was a lot different than what I thought it would be. Porto did open up a little bit and come forward more than I thought they would. I don't know what caused that. Maybe they thought they could nick an early goal like everyone was saying, but they certainly made a game of it, and it was a hard game. I'm glad I don't have to watch Portuguese teams every week, boys, because I don't like the way they play. I don't like the constant play acting and laying on the floor. But at the end of the day, it was a tough game. Porto would be a tough side to beat anybody to beat. It wasn't just us. Anybody would have found it tough to beat that Porto team. And we did it. And we won on penalties. Yeah, that's accepted. But we're now back in the last eight, Alex, boy. Back in...
First time in 14 years.
Yeah, we are back in the elite football teams of Europe, just where the Arsenal belongs, you know? So that's brilliant, mate. That's brilliant.
Yeah, agreed. Dan, what was your thoughts going into the game?
Yeah, I think I was pretty similar, to be honest with you. I'm not often nervous before games, but I felt quite nervous, especially on the concourse team beforehand. I felt a bit nervous and didn't quite feel right. It's bad enough having to stand near Fergus, so that's probably what made me feel a bit sort of worse where at the beginning of the game. But Porto, an experienced side, as we saw. They played the dirty side of the game very well. And I actually agree with the comments in the chat. I don't think we played fantastic, which I think is a good thing, because I think we've got many, many levels to go. But we've got a lot of learning to do very quickly if we want to go all the way, which we can do, I believe.
Yeah, it certainly feels like we're building that winning mentality at the moment. So like going into the game, lineups, Raya came back in the team. Otherwise, the team was unchanged. Trev, you just mentioned it, but going into the game, I thought we'd take full control of the game, bounce off the atmosphere, and sort of pepper their box with shots and put pressure on them. But it seemed like it was a bit different. They managed to keep the ball quite well and take the tempo out of the game from the beginning. How did you experience the first 15, 20 minutes?
Look, right, this is Champions League football, boys. I know it's been 14 years since we've been at this stage. But that's what happens in Champions League football. You play clever teams. You play the best teams in Europe, possibly the world. And if we get to the final, Alex, which obviously I hope we do, we're going to get there by not dominating any games. You don't dominate teams at this level. They're all good sides, and you just the better side. And sometimes you need the rub of the green. Sometimes you need a bit of luck as well, you know. But we're not going to dominate anybody before we get to this. If we get to this final, we're going to get there through hard graft and being a slightly better side and having a bit of luck. They're all good sides. It's you look at that final eight now and you think, wow. If you pick the best eight sides in Europe, you've probably got all of them in there. Most of them, if not all of them in there. It really is a strong, strong quarterfinal lineup. But we're in it, and you've got to be in it to win it, boys. We are there. We've worked our socks off and we're there.
Do you not think this is probably one of the strongest quarterfinal lineups that I've seen in many, many years?
Yeah, all the top clubs are in it.
Yeah.
I mean, look right. Exactly right, Danny. They are. I put a bit on social media this morning and I wrote out this tweet, a list of the eight teams in the quarterfinals, and I thought, Oh my lord, you know, we have got to play some football to beat any of these sides. But what's good is, you know, deep down inside me, I know that we're capable if we play to our best. We're not going to go into the quarterfinal against a team and think we're going to lose here. Not a chance. We're going to go into a quarterfinal against any team thinking they're a damn fine side we're playing, but we are as good on our day. You know what I mean? We are as good on that day. I'm excited about what's coming.
I think, to be honest, I think we're better than most of the teams. The only thing we're lacking is the experience. That's probably what they've got the upper hand on. But I think on our day, I'm pretty sure we can beat most of the teams back in the that's left in the Champions League.
You know what I'd say that we're potentially lacking is it reminds me a little bit of when City first got into the Champions League, a bit under Pep.
Agreed.
They were a very, very good side still when they got into the Champions League with Pep, but they missed like a clinical edge up front. They dominated many, many games, but they couldn't quite finish teams off. And then they was a little bit sloppy here and there, and that's how they got knocked out. So that's the only worry for me, is that maybe we need to make sure that we're not sloppy. You know, we need to be putting our chances away, because you don't get as many chances in Europe as you do in the Premier League.
Absolutely.
And if we do that, then we've got every chance.
Alex, going a bit more specific about that, mate, right? Dan makes a cracking point there. I think when you think about that, taking chances, and you're not going to get away with it all night, Alex. I'm asking you some questions as well, son, right?
That's fair enough.
I think that Kai Havertz could turn out to be very much a key player for us in Europe going forward. I really do. What do you reckon?
I completely agree. And he's one of those players that's got the experience. I mean, he's a proven winner. He's, you know, we all know the game. He decided the Champions League final. So he's been in moments like that, and he's got the experience, and he's capable of finishing chances as well. And he's improving his confidence game by game. So I completely agree. He can be a massive player. And he also showed that he can step up. He took the penalty, slotted it away nicely. So yeah, I agree. He can be a very important player for us in the next game.
Joe, you know, I'd also say is that the key players that are making a difference for us at the minute are the players that we've signed this season. You know, Declan Rice in that midfield. Yeah. David Raya's made two fantastic penalty saves in that last round. And Havertz, as you said at the moment, is making a difference. So it just goes to show the recruitment at the club, how good it's been. And sometimes it's had some bad publicity from the fans saying, is it enough? Do we need this? Do we need that? I think it's looking like who we bought this summer is a top window.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It just keeps showing that we can trust Edu and Arteta and the player recruitment.
Well, Alex, you've got to put a bit of perspective on what Arteta and Edu have done, right? When you 4 or 5 years ago, we weren't in the top eight in England. We weren't. Yeah. We struggled to get in the top eight in England, right?
Yeah.
Now, we're top eight in Europe. And we've got a chance of winning the league for the second year in a row. What they've done is massive, mate. You're absolutely right, mate. Absolutely right.
Massive. Yeah, I think I mentioned it on the last podcast as well. It's just like it's Arteta's first managerial job. I mean, it's crazy to think of what he's done in those 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I want to just go back to the game, because it was a tough thing to break them down, and it felt like we needed a bit of magic to break the deadlock, and our captain, our skipper, he stepped up and provided that. Dan, how did you see that goal?
Well, just before I analyse the goal, I mean, he's been a bit quiet lately. So, Fergus, do you want to analyse the goal, mate?
To be sure,
Fergus. Well done. Well done.
I'm just watching tonight, Daniel, myself.
I do agree with everything you just said there, Fergus. Well done. Great analysis. But yeah, I honestly, the assist from Ødegaard, it's a little bit of magic, and it's what he does. You know, he danced onto his left foot and he played a perfect weighted ball, which opened up the defence. And we need players like that. But I think he operates better in that position with Havertz further up the pitch as well, in that striker position. I think sometimes that when him and Havertz both play as the eights, some of his space gets taken up by Havertz as well. And maybe we don't see the best Ødegaard. So I think at the minute, this starting lineup, the team that started that game is looking like our best team at the minute. And I don't think I'd change that going forward for now.
Yeah. Well, listen, we can't stop talking about Ødegaard yet, right? We have to give him the time on this podcast that he's earned, Ødegaard, because he was astonishing. I watched it on the television, didn't I? So I saw a bit of a different game with you boys. His touch and control to put Trossard through for the first goal, boys, was Bergkamp-esque. I'm telling you, it was Bergkamp-esque. It was that good. And then when we get to the 120th minute, and he's still bombing around the field like it's the first minute, Ødegaard.
His energy levels was crazy.
Off the scale. Absolute best performance I've seen from an Arsenal player in a while now. And I mean that, there's no joviality in that. I mean that sincerely. He was absolutely off the scale, he was, against Porto, Ødegaard.
Yeah, and he kept the crowd going as well. He's one of those players who likes to articulate to the fans and keep them engaged as well. So, yeah, he really drove us forward. And, yeah, I thought, apart from the goal, we didn't have the best first half. Saka looked a bit off in some of his actions. Trossard as well, apart from the goal. But he just showed he's a lethal finisher, isn't he?
It's quite interesting you say that about Trossard. Is literally just before we scored in the stadium, we were sitting there saying, do you know what? I think I'd be making a change in the second half.
Yeah, I agree.
So it just goes to show that, you know, as I said earlier, I don't think we played our best game, but we still got through, and that's a big, big sign. But Ødegaard, I think, doesn't get enough credit, and he's been doing it all season. His pressing is fantastic, and he sets the standard as a leader with what he does on the pitch and not necessarily how vocal he always is. But I quite like how he's with the crowd. I don't know, some people it tends to rub up the wrong way. Some people may not like it, but I love players saying to the crowd, come on, I want more. Like, we demand.
I agree, yeah.
And they should do the same with us.
Yeah. Alex, we're getting a few really good questions in the comments, right? I'll put one or two up, mate, and plow into them, right? This is an interesting one from Andy, right? Last season, maybe I'd have laughed at it. This season, I don't laugh at that.
Especially with how injured De Bruyne has been, and he's aging as well. What is he, 33 now, De Bruyne?
Yeah.
So,
what do you reckon, Dan? He's on that level. He's getting there, you know.
I mean, if you're asking me right this minute, I'd probably say current form, yes, he's showing he's better. But is he a better player than KDB was at the top of his game? I mean, he's got levels to go because KDB is number
one. He's still got things to show. And I think KDB on his merits is better. And he's had a massive career. But I think when you look over the next 2-3 years, I'd definitely rather have Ødegaard.
I just generally think with someone like Kevin De Bruyne, we'll look back in 10 years' time and say, maybe not on the same lines as Messi and Ronaldo, but what a top player that we've been able to see live, and so glad we've had him in the Premier League. So it's like most legends, they're not always appreciated while they're playing, but you look back and think, wow, what a player. By all means, Ødegaard can get to that standard, and I don't think he's a million miles away.
Yeah.
You know, you've made the point already, boys, in, as I said, that probably last season we would have laughed at that question. This season we're discussing it because Ødegaard's getting right up there. What about this one, Alex?
Yeah, I was actually sat next to Aaron in the stadium. Good to see you in the chat as well. Kivior definitely deserves a mention. He was incredible in the game. I thought he did really well. They had some tricky wingers, and their game plan, apart from mastering the dark arts of the football was pretty much just to play those long balls to their wingers. And I think both Ben White and Kivior did extremely well in defending and nullifying both their wingers.
Dan, we've got a back four, haven't we? We haven't got one or two defenders. We've got a back four, haven't we?
We've got a back four or four centre-halves, really, haven't we? And the two guys that are playing at fullback at the minute, I honestly never thought I'd see them adapt to the fullback positions as they are, like, if I'm being totally honest. Ben White surprised me playing out there, but then he's made the position his own. But it's only a couple of weeks ago I was saying still Kivior looks like a centre-half playing left-back. And I'd probably say for the first time in this game, he looked like a fullback as opposed to a centre-half, which I think is testament to how he's progressing. But look, it's a progression he needed to make, because I'm being totally honest, that was a position I was worrying about with Zinchenko. If he was out injured, Timber still out, who's going to play that role? But it looks like he's finally starting to step up, which is good to see for, you know, competition throughout the team. I think some of our players need competition in that position. Players like Zinchenko, again, who I thought would walk back into the team, all of a sudden don't walk back into it. And you've got Jurrien Timber, who I think looks like an absolute world-class player that, again, I said would just walk into that position. There's a couple of question marks now, and Kivior's very firmly now part of this team, not just a bit part player that plays here and there, but a key part of us keeping clean sheets.
Yeah, absolutely. What defensive squad we've got. I'm very happy with it. And you're right, White has developed into, in my view, is superb at right back. And Kivior has done it in a much shorter space of time. Kivior has done it very quickly. Alex, one more before we get back to your agenda, son, right? Because this is an interesting one. I'm not sure how you saw it at the game, right? But Demsek says Saka was silenced by Wendell. Saka came up against a very, very good defender, didn't he, Tuesday night?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it was Reese that asked me before the game who he should put a bet on getting a yellow card. And I said, put a bet on Wendell. I think Saka will give him problems. But he really proved me wrong, the fullback from Porto. And Saka just, he didn't look at his best in the game, and he just didn't succeed in a lot of his take-ons. I think Wendell did read him pretty well in going both ways. And he just never really found his feet in the game until the very, very last moment where it mattered. Luckily we got our goal from the other side this time. But yeah, I'm not too worried about Saka. It's fine to have a game like that, but I'm sure he'll bounce back and improve in the next game. What about you, Dan?
I'd say not even this game, the first game as well. The fullbacks from Porto knew where the threat was, and they dealt with our wingers very, very well. Like, you have to give credit to Porto defensively. I thought they were very good across both legs. I'm never worried about Saka. I mean, there was something I read earlier from Saka that he basically has been watching his games back. He knows that he's getting doubled up on, and he's trying to find ways of changing that and being more effective. But even when he's not having his best game, the fact that he has two men on him gives us space across the rest of the team. There's space elsewhere. There's a man not being picked up. And that's where we just need, I think we've been better in the last few weeks of making and taking advantage of that space elsewhere, opening teams up and scoring goals.
Yeah. So going back to the game, I want to jump to one of the key moments or potential key moments in the game. he is looking good, Ferg, isn't he?
It's the best he's looked for a while. I'm not going to lie. It's the best he's looked for a while.
At least he's made an effort with his attire tonight. You know, he's normally a bit rough, isn't he?
Yeah. After all these ginger comments, mate, you're going a bit ginger.
Yeah, he's almost got the German lederhosen on, hasn't he?
He is. I tell you what, though, this is probably the least annoying I've ever seen Fergus. So fair play, Fergus. You've taken our comments on board, mate, and I really appreciate the effort.
He's being a good boy tonight.
Anything to say, Fergus?
Oh, to be sure.
All right. Boys, let's jump back to the game. 68 minutes in, we had a potential key situation. from my point of view, I saw Havertz chasing down the 41-year-old Pepe. And then the next thing I saw, Odegaard put the ball in the net. Trev, you had a better view because I couldn't really see much. I was behind the goal. What did you see, and was the referee right in disallowing the goal?
Yeah, the referee was bang on, mate, and VAR was bang on. It was he pulled him back, Havertz. I was gutted because when you first saw it on the television, it didn't look like he pulled him. But when they showed you the other angle, he had a good pull on him and pulled him to the ground. And, of course, as we've seen through the whole of the two legs, you're going to pull a Portuguese player's shirt, he's going to go down very easily and with all the theatrics, you know. It wasn't a goal. The right decision was given.
Dan, what was your view on the situation?
You're going to have to guide me on this because, to be honest, that's the one thing I've not watched back because I've just been, honestly, since that game, I don't know how you feel, Alex, I've been absolutely shattered. And
yeah, me too.
Emotionally, it just drained so much out of
me. It was so draining, yeah.
I mean, I was tired already at the best of times. The pre-game on the concourse, I think, already took it out of me. I lost my voice by kickoff. And then I got home, and I think I've just tried to sleep ever since. But from what I've heard, it was a foul. I would have liked that at that point to alleviate all of the stress that was to come. And it would have been nice to wrap that up, wouldn't it, looking back. But I don't know about you guys. Would you change it? I mean, I never like penalties for the reasons that we just said about stress and everything else. But
I was dreading it.
Looking back, what way to win it?
Boys, listen, right. Alex, Dan, there was a question earlier on. I'm not going to scroll back and get it now, but I can 100% tell you it is easier being there, right, than it is at home. Because I'm in the Arsenal room now. I've got a TV in here and I sat in here and watched it. The missus heard me screaming and shouting. She came in and sat next to me and watched it. And the penalties, I was a complete and utter emotional mess. I'm not shy to say when that winner went in, there were tears running down my face. I'm not scared to say it. I'm an Arsenal fan, you know. And just like you boys never slept, you know, after the end of the penalties, I went next door and got into bed. I just laid there looking at the ceiling for about 3 hours thinking, yeah, we're back in Europe's elite. The last 16 of the Champions League, okay, the last eight, as is shown, is where you get the big boys. Where you
14
get
years.
Stuff, you know, unbelievable. And so I had about 3 hours sleep as well. I didn't sleep much at all, to be honest. And do you know what? I didn't care less.
Well, do you know what? Yeah. Jeff, just leading on a little bit from one of the questions in the chat, are we getting too excited or are we doing the right thing?
Look, mate, listen, right? Listen, I've not heard anybody say, oh, yeah, we're going to win it and go over the top. But, of course, we have every right to be excited, right? We have every right to be excited. You know, we're in the last eight of the Champions League. You know, social media this week, Tottenham fans, Chelsea fans, Liverpool fans, they've all been into us this week. And that's great because that means we're back where we should be and you know, we're boiling people again, you know, and we're in people's heads again. And that's exactly where the Arsenal need to be. And we're there. And I'm going to get excited about, I don't have to be excited about winning it. I'm excited about the fact we're playing in the Champions League quarterfinal. You know, we're going to play Barcelona or even the Madrid teams or PSG, you know, or Man City and Dortmund or Bayern. Wow. We've not been at that level for years. For years and years and years. But it weren't long ago. Bayern Munich were beating us 10-2 over two legs, you know? So, of course, every Arsenal fan should be getting excited, very excited and hopeful. Maybe not expectant yet, but very hopeful that we can get there.
And it's the best thing you can have as a fan, isn't it? Hope. I think a lot of other fans, most other fans, are probably dreaming about being in the position that we're in right now. And I think you have to have hope as a fan, and it's the one thing that keeps you going as a football fan is the hope, isn't it?
The one thing I'd say is, if anything that the last few years have shown us is there's no divine right to be in this competition in the latter stages. So if I could give one message to the team, I'd probably say, look back at how we've missed it the last few years, and do you know what? Go and take your chance, because there's no given right that we'll be in it next year, the year after, and any other year. So take your chance.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, going back to the game, there really wasn't much to talk about in the game itself. We went to extra time. Nothing really happened in extra time. It seemed really, really nervy. None of the teams really had any massive chances in the game. And I think both in the end settled for penalties was the way to end this game. Guys, the guy sat next to me asked if I knew Raya was any good at penalties. And I said, haven't got a clue. But I did know that we've got some brilliant penalty takers on the field. And we've switched our penalty takers throughout the season. We scored all our penalties on the Community Shield as well. Guys, how was your feelings going into the penalty shootout, apart from shitting yourselves?
Language. Go on, Dan.
Sorry.
That was Fergus that swore. It wasn't Alex.
Oh, shitting yourself.
To be sure. First thing, we now know the answer to that question. Is it Raya any good at penalties? He bloody is.
He is.
I'm not going to turn this into a Raya versus Ramsdale debate, but the one thing I've always thought with Ramsdale in goal is I've never really seen him get too near to penalties. Raya just looks like, you get certain goalkeepers that are just very good at shootouts, and I think he could be one of them. And that's a huge asset to have in this sort of competition as well. But our young players the last few years, I think, have looked quite decent at penalties. And I know we lost to Lisbon on the penalty shootout, but the last few years, even in the pre-season games, they just look really, really cool and calm, pick their spot, and then that's what we need. Nothing major, like some of the penalties we saw last night flying over the bars and trying to hit top bins. You don't always have to do that. And we've got some very, very skillful footballers that can pick their spot. So I've got no worries if we do it again, although I'd quite like not to have to watch that again because that was a bit stressful.
It was stressful, yeah.
Alex, you know what? Arteta's interview after, Arteta said, we practiced the penalties yesterday, but we missed a load. But thankfully, that was yesterday. He honestly did, right? And Demsek's got a point here, boys. Not that one. I've got that wrong. Here we go. As it came towards the end of extra time, boys, the commentators on the TV weren't suggesting. I've still got it wrong. Here we go. They weren't suggesting that we brought Ramsdale on, but they were, you know what the media do? They caught on to a remark for that Arteta made about he wouldn't be scared to substitute a goalkeeper. And they started saying, would Arteta sub Ramsdale for Raya? And it's obviously, of course, Arteta wouldn't do that, you know? And hopefully you boys saw it. Hopefully they've put that to bed now, because Ramsdale, after the game, genuinely found Raya and gave him the biggest smiley hug you could ever wish to see, right? Now, that doesn't say that Ramsdale is happy being second choice to Raya, but what it does say to me is that Ramsdale is saying, if Raya's the first choice, I'm going to give him all my support. And hopefully they've put that to bed now, because it's a bit sad the media keep catching on to that, and hopefully that's gone now. It's been put to bed. They had a big cuddle, a big smiley cuddle. There were two mates celebrating an Arsenal win. So, yeah, all good.
Yeah, that is something, actually, I remember hearing watching that bit back, because I did watch the penalties back. And then there was something else that sort of caught my eye a little bit. They said when Saka stepped up, they said Saka never misses. I was listening to that thinking, do you know what? It feels like they're just trying to put a curse.
Yeah, set him up for failure.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I think there's definitely a media bias towards us, but do you know what? Always just embrace it and enjoy being hated.
Look, right, look, the media are not keen on us, are they? I mean, Rio Ferdinand was on the touchline after the game, boys. He was having to be nice about the Arsenal, especially because Keown was stood next to him watching him, you know. And you can tell it wasn't easy for him to do. We're not the best liked side on the planet, are we? But I love that as a fan. We all love that, don't we? I wallow in it. I love looking at social media. I just said it, I know, but the last couple of days has been superb. Some of the things that Tottenham fans, one actually put on social media, right? Well, we beat Porto 5-1 in 1991.
Yeah, I saw that.
Get out of here. Stop the straws and go away. Unbelievable.
That was 10 years before I was born. We can't talk about stuff like that.
Lord. That was the year I was born, so it wasn't that long ago, was it?
Right. Yeah. Alex, have you got any more? I've got a couple of bits here, mate, you know.
I mean... Do you want to go more in depth about the penalties, or do you want to talk about the things after the game?
I think that the penalties, we just took four superb penalties, didn't we? They really were unsavable. The goalkeeper didn't look like saving any of them. And at the end of the day, think of the people we still had to go up to take penalties. You know, we had some good players yet to go up there to take a
penalty. Jesus, for example.
You what?
Jesus, for example.
Yeah, absolutely, Jesus, yeah, amongst others. So what more can you say about the penalty shootout? I know we've done it really well, the penalties, but it's still luck of the draw. You still got to get a bit lucky with the penalties, you know. Raya was superb after the game, and... Because I think it was Laura Woods interviewed him, and she said, "Well done, David. You've saved two penalties." And he looked her straight in the eye and he went, "Should have been three," you know.
And it nearly was. It nearly was, wasn't it?
What an attitude! What an attitude to have from our goalkeeper. Yeah, brilliant. So, what more can you say about the penalties, Dan? We won. Sorry, Alex.
Yeah, we won, and I think Odegaard winning the coin toss, both coin tosses as well. And I mean, us going first, putting the pressure on, and it was loud in the North Bank as well. We were doing everything we could to put them off. And I'd like to believe it helped and it worked. Because, I mean, especially the last penalty taker, Galeno, he really took his time taking that penalty. And he did look a bit nervous. But yeah, I mean, Ray was incredible. Our penalty takers were incredible. And then after the game, something interesting happened. I think we've all heard it. The comments from the Porto coach, Quentin Sao. He accused Arteta of insulting one of his family members after the game. Boys, what was your reaction to hearing that accusation?
Well, how did it look at the stadium, Dan?
I mean, I didn't notice it, if I'm totally honest. So when I got home...
Me neither.
Watched it and I saw about an incident after and then started reading about it. I was like, well, I wonder what went on. And I'm in two minds, right? The first part is, don't forget your values as a club. We're a classy club. If it's been said, I hope not. But also, like, in translation, things can get changed. But then there's another part of me that's sort of like, do you know what? I love the edge that Arteta has. And I love the fact that he winds people up. And I love the fact that they don't like him, because as a fan base, it just gets us even more behind him. And you know, every time he gets booked, the crowd singing his name and gets behind him. And it just, I just think everything he does is great for this club. Just maybe pick your words a little bit better next time.
Look, come on, boys. Arteta is a very passionate man, right? He gets animated a lot. But he's also quite an intellectual man. He knows where the line's drawn, and for me, he ain't going to cross that line. You know, as Andy says, and as Demtek says, that's not the first time that Portuguese manager opposition manager as of doing that, and maybe he's got a problem where Arteta hasn't got a problem. I don't believe for a minute that Arteta has done anything wrong. I think he's fishing for an excuse. Maybe his job's under threat. I don't know, whatever. He's fishing for an excuse. And he said that. And naughty. Very, very naughty. Because at the end of the day, even if Arteta did...
Oh, for God's sake.
Let me put him on mute a minute. Right. Even if Arteta did say that, then there's places for that opposition manager to confront him. And it weren't on a pitch like that, you know. Get in a tunnel, get in the manager's office, and then have a chat about it. Stupid.
I think I think he's been smoking too much cigar, and I think Arteta might have winded him up a bit, and then he's a sore loser. That's my view on it.
Exactly. And anyway, ladies and gentlemen, right? Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a very special guest back in the room.
Hello, hello, hello.
It's very dark there, which is very good because you don't have to look at him.
I was trying to replicate Dan's lighting. That's what I was trying to do, but you know, I've figured it out a little bit better. Penalty shootout, guys. I've been listening to you as I was walking along the street. It was nerve wracking, and also some of the shithousery afterwards by the Porto manager, especially after the first game, was such bittersweet justice that we were to beat them on that, especially the performance we had in the first game, the performance that we had in the second game, and when they couldn't play football against us, they just tried every tactic to try and undo football. It was good.
Ferg, listen, yeah. Son. Ferg, we stopped talking about the penalties about 5 minutes ago, right?
Oh, that's when I came into the flat.
It's old hat. But no, at the end of the day, Alex, we're in the quarterfinals. I don't know where you want to move to next, but I'm desperate to get people's thoughts on who they would like to play next, right? And being rude, for me to go first, I don't care. I genuinely do not care who we play.
Okay.
How many stadiums have you been to out of the ones that's left in the draw?
Oh, God. Well, if I had any common sense, I'd want to go to Barcelona too, because they're not playing in the Nou Camp at the moment, are they? They're playing in a different stadium. Other than that, I'd like to go to, you know, Dortmund. I've not been to. I'd love to go to Dortmund, but I genuinely don't care. I don't care, Alex. We'll go across to Man City and beat them if we have to. I don't care.
Dan, I think you've got a different opinion.
City. Anyone but City. City is not a European tour. Yeah. I do not want to go on a European tour to Manchester.
That would be a bit boring.
That would be the absolute worst of it, honestly. And then beyond that, take PSG out. Lonza's ruined it for me. I don't like French fans. I'm very sorry if there's many watching, but that your one of your local clubs in Lonza has let yourselves down. Other than that, honestly, a trip to Germany or Spain would be absolutely lovely. I think they'd all be fantastic away days. I'd probably rather not get Atletico if I had to out of a Spanish side, because I think we play better against teams that will come at us. Atletico is like a Porto, but maybe even more experienced with a horrible manager. So
Simeone.
I didn't enjoy going to the one that Metropolitano a few years ago. I'd much rather be the other side of Madrid if we had a choice. But yeah, Dortmund would be fantastic. Bayern would be great. Look, these are the ties we want to get to. Absolutely do not be afraid of picking one of the big boys out. We've got to beat him at some point. Why not do it now? And then the final one, Barcelona, would probably be my preference. Like I said, since day one, never actually been to the city of Barcelona, so would love to go there. Add that to the fact they're not in their own stadium. You know, as a fan, this could be a real sort of one-off opportunity to see another ground that probably most fans will not get to see their team play at. So that'd be a nice one too.
Ferg, before you answer, I don't like that. You've got that, mate. You've got to go in your deserved position, please. Before you answer that, Ferg, I've got a little lead up question. Before you tell us who you want to draw, if the two legs, I know you're going away, but if the two legs work out in favour, are you coming now?
Probably unlikely, but I think if it was PSG, it would be easy. Our city, it would be easier and more feasible because it's a car drive away. I think if anybody's thinking and planning ahead, booking a couple of flights to Madrid, just the outward flights on the Monday of the week, the 8th of April and the 13th, 14th of April, whatever it is, wouldn't be an unwise thing to do, because even if you got to Madrid on a Monday, you could easily get to Barcelona. So it's a good spot to pitch yourself from. All the German places you can get to by rail, road, and same with the French ones. Am I going? Highly unlikely, mate. Highly unlikely. Who would I like? I actually wouldn't mind City.
Because I think I know you talked a lot about the game on Porto, but if you looked at the way we played European football, and Dan, you'll remember the conversation that was gone on around us about the dark arts and how European football is very much different to Premier League football. For us to play a team that likes to play football like Man City, or even a Barcelona to a certain degree, but they have the dark arts about them. But for us to play against a footballing side, I think over two legs, I think we could do City. So for me, I'll take City right now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I agree. I honestly agree. It is a European tour.
Sunny Spain.
I mean, the thing, what you got to remember with Madrid, though, in those flights, Fergie, is that there's lots of ways of getting to Madrid. So it wouldn't be a panic. And as for Atletico, Dan, we lost Atletico in the final of the Europa League 3 or 4 seasons ago. Mate, what a stadium and what a trip. I wouldn't mind going back there at all. Amazing place to go and watch a game of football. And Madrid, what a city it is. I know a nice Irish bar in Madrid, by the way.
Apparently, they do great mojitos. And they've got this act of some guy who stands swinging his scarf around his head with no top on, singing about Jesus.
Yeah, who's that then?
Who would that be?
Fortunately, I'm in control tonight, Fergus. You keep your hands off that video, son.
Dan wouldn't know. He was busy doing other things.
So what, Alex, what about you, mate? Are you coming?
I'd like to say I am, yeah. But yeah, it would be difficult getting a ticket, but it depends on how big the allocation is we're going to.
But in your very excited mode on Tuesday night, you're going, I don't care where it is, I'm going.
Yeah,
even if I'm not a ticket, I'm going.
That was what I was about to say. I think I might go even without a ticket, but yeah, we'll have to see who we're drawing and where we're going.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out tomorrow morning, boys.
Fergus won't let the side down, will he? He's not a letdown, so he'll be there.
What time is it? 11 o'clock, the draw tomorrow, is it? Is it 11 o'clock British time?
Yeah.
Boys, me a favour. I'm driving down to Newcastle in the morning, so I'll be on the road. I'm going up to watch Louis Dunford tomorrow night in Newcastle. So if I don't get that draw, someone please message me with who we've got, yeah?
I'll be in Berlin Airport by that stage, so I'll be sitting there watching it and I'll let you know. I'm in lovely Dresden right now. Woo-hoo. I tell you, beer's great. You'd love it here. You'd love it. The beer's unreal and it's cheap as...
You got there very quick. How did you get from there to there?
I know.
Be sure.
He's gone. Ah, he's back.
Get off the controls. So, boys, listen, is there any... Alex, have you got anything else down to talk about?
I think I've got one last serious thing on my agenda, which I'd like to get your opinion on. And it was a tweet. I'm doing a Fergus here. It was a tweet from Hente, our good friend of the podcast. And he pulled up a stat... saying that in this calendar year, we've played 11 matches till Porto, and that equals a game in every 6.5 days. And from City on, we'll play 13 games in 50 days, and that's if we're going all the way in the Champions League, and that's a game every 3.8 days. So it means that we're going to play twice as often from the City game and onwards. And just looking at the Porto game, Arteta waited 83 minutes to make the first substitution, and then he made two more in the first half of extra time. Do you think Arteta, he'll need to trust some of those players on the bench more from the City game and on, just to save some energy and avoiding any injuries?
I'll spin it back on you. Of those people who are on the bench, we were calling for certain players to be taken off. Not calling, but we're discussing. We were discussing about certain players who have been taken off and swapped. Mainly Trossard, but and possibly Saka. But who were you going to bring on, and who did you really have a huge amount of confidence on? Like, you had Smith Rowe on there, you had Eddie on there, you had Nelson on there, all fine players in their own right. But are they really top quality players? And I even include Smith Rowe in that, who I have.
Well, obviously, Sinny and Nketiah came on. But I think apart from that, Tommy, he's just getting back from injury. I think he could play a part in the latter stages of the season. I think Partey, we all know how good he can be. If he can stay fit and get back to his best, I think he could play a part as well. Fabio Vieira is a player we haven't seen much of, but everybody's saying he's this massive talent. And I saw a video today, I think it was where they asked the players who's the most underrated player in the team. And a lot of them said Fabio Vieira. So obviously they've seen something in him. And Arteta as well, we spoke about the player recruitment. The
whiskey sours I've had.
I mean, we paid 35 million quid for him and we know how good our player recruitment's been. So he's obviously got some talent as well. Reece Nielsen as well. Do you think some of those players could play a part in the season?
I don't think that the game against Porto was a game where he needed to use subs early, right? It wasn't high tempo. It wasn't high tempo. And as Odegaard showed, he still had as much energy in his legs after 120 minutes as he did after 12 minutes. So, I trust our substitutes. And look what we've got coming back as well. Exactly. Look, GDW says that Timber will be about soon. You know, Tomiyasu is now back in the squad, you know. So it's looking better all the time. I've got no problem with our squad players. Arteta obviously doesn't have too much of a problem. I mean, we all got on Eddie's back, but he brought him on when we needed a goal, you know. So, yeah, I'm not worried about our squad situation. And importantly for me is that after the last break, we came back really strong, right? And we've now got 2 weeks off. Just over 2 weeks off, haven't we?
Yeah.
And they'll have plans to get their energy levels back up sky high again. And I'm sure we'll come out firing on all cylinders again. And then we've only got, at the most, about 15, 16 games till the end of the season. And the boys can get through that. They can do that. I've got no worries about that side of things, Alex, whatsoever.
So you'd play the same, pretty much the same players week in, week out, even though it's a game every 3 days?
Alex, what I'd play week in, week out is our best team, mate.
Yeah, what is our best team then?
Well, it's the team he put out on Tuesday. There's not a lot better, is there? You know, that was our... That was it. So them boys can play two games a week if they have to, especially when they're in with a chance of winning things, because they're right up for that. They're right up for winning things, and that gets their energy levels up. As someone just said in the chat there, I've got no worries at all about our running this year. Unlike last year, unless, my God, please don't let it happen, unless fate strikes twice again and injuries come back to haunt us like they did last season at the end. Hopefully they won't this year and we're going to have, you know, some good people about right to the end of the season.
Don't you think balancing the squad and giving some of the squad players minutes could prevent those injuries?
Not at this stage of the season, no.
No, I'm with Trev. I think the starting 11 that we've got is the best starting 11 we've got. There are some peripheral players that are good enough to get in there, but I don't think we've got the depth in the squad bar about 14 players. And I think that's the only thing that we've not done well from last season to this season. And everyone talks about needing a striker and so on, but I don't think we've added depth into our squad over the transfer window, the last couple of transfer windows. We've let players go Shaka and so on, but we haven't actually, we've replaced them with equal and better players, but we haven't added to the depth of the squad.
Dan?
I don't quite agree with that. I think we've got players that can come in and be changed. You look at that lineup that started against Porto, you could quite easily have, when he's fit again, hopefully not too far out, Martin Lee comes back into that side.
Yes.
Jesus rotates. I think when you look at the midfield, when he's fully fit, Thomas Partey can easily exchange with probably Rice and whoever plays the eight role. We've got now, if Zinchenko's fit, can come back into that side. Tomiyasu can rotate in as well. The difference is you're not going to see them make five changes in one game. You're going to see probably these players play 8 or 9 out of 10 games, and it'll be that one or two where they rotate maybe one or two at a time. And it will probably be, I would imagine, the home games where we play against the lower league teams. He may change a fullback, or he may change a midfielder or a striker, something like that, that we'll see. But there will be some form of rotation because they won't be playing every single game to the end of the season. But I do also agree that at this sort of part of the running now, you play your best team week in, week out, pretty much, and you get momentum from winning, you get momentum from progressing through the Champions League next stages. The players will be excited that they've got something that they can achieve, and quite easily, you know, any sort of legginess they feel goes out the window when they feel like that. If you start to lose a run of 2, 3, or 4 games, then I'd imagine the tiredness and legginess can crop back in. But when you're winning, you just want the next one.
Alex, mate. You're only a young lad, so you've not experienced this. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, but we're in with a massive chance of winning the Premier League, right? And we're in the last 8 of the Champions League. The Champions League, we have not been in that position for many, 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 many years. The Premier League, we had a chance last season, but injuries kicked in and finished us off. We have to, with the few games that are left this season, we will play our strongest side every week. And if that means starting with the same 11 players every week, then so be it. I mean, there's going to be, we've still got 1 or 2 games. We might take a 2 or 3 nil lead, and then Arteta can pile the subs on, you know. But where we are now at this stage of the season, the feeling of the fans and what we can win and the progress we can make, it's got to be your best 11 every week, mate. It's got to be your best 11.
Do you think that could be a problem for Arteta going into the summer transfer market if we see some of those players on the bench and they get zero game time from in the starting 11, players like Partey, Jesus, Trossard, Martinelli, some of those big players? If he sticks to the same 11 every single game, do you think they'll think, I have no chance of playing in this starting 11? Arteta's just proved that. Do you think they could think, like, I might go other ways now in the summer?
Look, we'll talk about this briefly, then we've got to move on and do the quick preview, because at the end of the day, this is a preview show, right? Look, I've absolutely no doubts in my mind that players will leave and players will come to Arsenal this summer. That's the way Arteta and Edu work. Arteta and Edu will already know 90% certain who's going to leave Arsenal Football Club. And they'll already know 90% certain who they want to go in to bring into the club. Dan pulled me up on it. Dan pulled me up on it last season or the season before, and it's very interesting. And he's right. You can't, if you've got the best team in Europe, you can't improve it, maybe, but you can make the squad stronger. Yeah. You can bring in people that freshen it up, that make people feel a bit uncomfortable in their first team position. You know, exactly really what has happened with Raya and Ramsdale. Everyone was happy with Ramsdale. We all thought we had a keeper for the next 10 years. And then he's brought Raya in and refreshed it and lifted it a level. So that'll happen this summer, Alex. Undoubtedly happen this summer. But we can't talk about that now, right? We cannot talk about that now. There's too much else going on to worry about the summer, mate. All we want to worry about is the last game of the football season and June the 1st. And hopefully we're playing games then, mate.
And the next game against City.
No, our hangover on June the 2nd is going to be immense.
It is. All right, Trev, you wanted to move on to the weekend's games. Yeah. There's FA Cup on, so there's a lot of postponed games, including us against Chelsea. There's 4 Premier League games on in the weekend. You can see it there. 2 of them are 3 o'clock kickoffs: Burnley, Brentford, and Luton Forest. Sorry,
have you done that, Fergus?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Starting off with the top game, Burnley-Brentford. Burnley were 2-0 up against West Ham away and looked to have all 3 points sealed, but lost 2 points in added time due to a Danny Ings goal. Brentford also lost 2 points. They looked like they were clinching a draw against us, and then King Kai headed home a winner. What do you think will happen in this game? Score predictions.
Go for
it. I'm too busy wobbling Fergus's head. Sorry, mate.
Berg, you start.
My head's getting still again. Who is it? Burnley, Brentford. Brentford.
Burnley, Brentford.
Brentford, even as... Burnley like to play football. And I have to commend what company's doing. He is trying to make them play football. They're gone straight back down. And they'll stick with Vincent Kompany, and I think that's commendable by the owners and everything else. But I think Burnley, Do Burnley get a goal? No. I'm on 2-0 Brentford.
Trev.
Yeah, I'm going the opposite way. Burnley are not very good, but Brentford have got a good performance and a bad performance in them. I think this week Burnley will rally. I fancy Burnley to rally this week and beat Brentford 2-1.
Yeah, see, this is the normal part of the season where you start to see the teams in the relegation zone start to pick up, start to get some wins. And I think we saw that last week where, although they didn't win, the likes of Sheffield United and Burnley, they did take the lead. They did have a bit more of a chance of picking up points. I know they dropped off and they ended up drawing, but this is where you'll start to see teams pick up. But I do think Brentford are a better side than Burnley. I think Brentford are more adept to soaking up pressure and hitting on the counter. So I'd probably go with just a 2-1 win to Brentford.
Yeah, I think I'm with Dan on this one. I'm going to support the Danes in the Brentford team. And I think they've got players like Mbeumo coming back as well. So he could... Sorry?
Sorry. Is he Danish, I said?
Who invited him?
He might have some Danish in him, but I think he's from Cameroon, to be
can
fair.
Can you say his name, Fergus? You've not said many names tonight. I'd like
Mbeumo.
He's been practicing this one. He knew he was going to say it.
Whiskey sours works.
I'm going with a 2-1 win for Brentford as well. But they need a win to stay up. They're getting close to the relegation zone as well. And speaking of relegation zone, I think we've got a so-called six-pointer in Luton versus Forest. A battle for survival in the Premier League. Luton led 3-0 on Wednesday against Bournemouth and threw away their lead, conceding 4 goals in a row. And Bournemouth won that game. Forest, they've lost 4 games in a row in the Premier League as well. Who's going to win this game and stay up in the Premier League? Fergie.
Luton at home are a formidable force. That was difficult to say. They are a difficult team to play at Kenilworth Road. It's
an old school ground.
I said difficult. I didn't try formidable, which I have now done twice. And I think if you look at Forest are okay. And that's all they've been all season. I would go for a home win on this. I think there will be goals. And I think you're looking at 3-1 to Luton. What's their main striker called?
Morris. Forest striker? Wouldn't you?
No. Yeah, is he available? Well,
Adebayo for Luton. And,
yeah, Adebayo. That's who I was thinking for Luton.
Forest. So I'm not sure if he's fit, is he? Because is it Woodrow who's been playing at times?
Woodrow and Morris.
Okay. I still think 3-1 to Luton.
Yeah. There'll be goals in the game, won't there? Because Luton always score a lot of goals. I mean, that was sensational last night, wasn't it? Going 3-0 up at Bournemouth and losing 4-3. It's, it was a sensational game of football to watch. But I think that at home, Luton will have too much for Forest. I really do. But it'll be high scoring. They'll both score goals. I don't know. I've gone 3-2 Luton, I have.
Yeah, I thought about that. Yeah.
Dan?
I don't think there'll be as many goals. I think these sort of games are a lot tighter than usual. I do agree Luton at home look like a different side. It's taken a while for them to really get their rhythm going. It seemed to be that period where they played the big teams at home that just lifted the crowd and got behind them, and they started a bit more of a momentum swing. Having said that, I think Forest probably have a better squad than their position suggests, but they've not really gelled. They spent a lot of money. I actually think both teams will be safe. I think Everton will probably go down out of the two. I'd see these two both staying up, but I do see Luton winning this maybe 2-1.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult game to predict with so much on the line, and it could be one of those where it gets a bit nervy and tense. So I'm predicting a 1-1 draw.
Okay.
Fair enough.
And the next one, Fulham against Spurs, is the late game on Saturday.
Spurs, but not Spurs.
Spurs ain't good. Spurs is nearly as bad as the C-bomb.
Spuds reminds me of
potato.
Potato. Fulham, they've got something to prove after losing against Wolves.
What are you talking foolishness for?
What are you talking foolish for?
Will you just get out of there, Fergus?
Yes.
He's disrupting us.
He's going all right till he joined us, wasn't it?
Yeah. We won't talk too much about Spurs' game last weekend. Unfortunately, they did pretty well and won against Villa. I think all of us predicted Villa to win that game. That didn't happen. What do you think? How do you think the game will play out, Fulham against Spurs? Scum.
I personally thought, I hoped that Aston Villa, and I thought that Aston Villa would actually do Spurs last weekend because of their style of football is quite suicidal. They're quite good to watch in the sense that it's entertaining from a neutral point of view to watch their football. Fulham, on the other hand, they've been really good. But I think Spurs seem to be growing into their role because of that victory against Villa that puts them back in the race for a top four. And now that we're into the quarterfinals of the Champions League, we actually could be gifting Spurs our Villa that fifth spot in the Champions League because of the coefficient and all this sort of stuff. But I think they'll push for the Champions League spot, and I think it's going to be an away win. Sadly, it will be struck off due to VAR, but I'm not going to say any more than that. It'll be that. Sorry, Trev, that well.
What you talking shit for?
Fergus drunk. Can we get a real... real prediction here?
I actually feel sick in my belly listening to him.
Feels like a penalty shootout, doesn't it?
My belly listening to
yeah.
Listen, right? They squeezed a lucky win at Villa last week, Tottenham, right? Villa were by far the best side, right? Against the run of play, Tottenham go and score a couple of lucky goals.
It was never a red card.
Never. This week at Fulham, they're coming up against a classy side in Fulham who like to win at home. They need to win this week at home. Tottenham might score. Tottenham might get a lucky goal, but Fulham are going to win comfortably at the weekend. I'm going 12-1 Fulham.
You know, not what? As confident as at your 16-0 prediction last game.
Yeah, they're more difficult opponents, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Leading on from a little bit of what Trevor said, I guess if he's going for 12, he's probably going for two tries and a conversion. So that could be two or three goals. And I actually think Fulham at home are a very good side. They've won 10 games, I think, this season, 8 at home. You look at what Spurs have done, I think 16 wins, 6 of them away. I think they've had 6 wins away, 5 draws away. They don't win a lot of their games away from home, Spurs. So they're going to a place that is difficult to go to. We saw when we went there, it's not an easy place to go to. So I genuinely actually think Fulham can get something from the game. And there's no bias in that either, to be fair. If I'm being really biased, I'll go with a Fulham win. But I probably would say something like a 1-1 or a 2-2 draw, I think, could happen. I think Middlesex might nick a point, but that's about it.
Crap you boys are coming out with tonight. Unbelievable.
We did say it was Arsenal biased, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex, don't let me down now, Alex. Do not let me down.
I'm going for a 2-1 Fulham win.
Is that all?
Willian winner in the 92nd minute. That would be glorious.
Knee slide like the Thierry celebration in front of the away fans, ripping off his shirt.
Oh, that would be incredible. let's move on to the last game.
On without naming another one. You've got a super Alex Iwobi that could score the winner as well.
Yeah.
He'll score the first goal, Willian with the winner in extra time.
It won't be assist, Willian goal?
I'll take both.
I mean, instead of William Hill, we've got Trevor Hill. So go put your bet on, people, if you're watching.
Yeah.
it was Paddy and Paddy Power last week.
Oh, yeah.
So come on,
West Ham Villa. Yeah, let's wrap up. Villa, West Ham. Villa... they'll obviously look to bounce back after the result against Scum last weekend. And West Ham, they are coming into the game on the back of a 2-2 draw where they managed to clinch a point last minute. And as of now, I think they are leading against Freiburg. So
they're coming in on the back of a 5-0 win tonight, Alex.
5-0 it is, yeah. So they'll obviously be going in with confidence. Maybe tired legs as well. Not much rest for them. Ferg, what's your prediction? West Ham, Villa?
Well, I made a phone call, you know, contacts and everything.
Oh, here we go.
There we go. I was waiting
for it. Can we get a prediction from your friend Kevin Nolan as well?
No. I think as you pointed out, 5-0 win tonight against Freiburg.
Freiburg
will pay its will cause issues, but are Villa not in the conference tonight as well?
Yes, I think
they're both at home. Okay, so it's all evens. West Ham look okay in Europe, but they look very poor and one dimensional in the league. If Piquet is fit, then yes, they can.
I think he is.
They can offer some sort of threat, but I think Villa offer much more of a threat with the likes of Ollie Watkins and Ramsey and so on. I would go an away win again. I think more goals in this game, and I think you're looking at 2-3, West Ham 2, Villa 3.
A lot of goals. Trevor?
Yeah, I think the Villa are going to bounce back after last week. I think that was a poor, an unusually poor performance from Villa last week. I couldn't believe how poorly they played. I don't think that Unai Emery is too good a manager to allow Villa to play that badly 2 weeks in a row. He'll have Villa up, and I'm going to take Villa to win at West Ham 2-0.
I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. I think neither team are really doing fantastic at the minute and setting the world alight. I think both teams will have a little bit of a hangover from Europe. I don't think it will be the most exciting game, and it might be a bore draw.
Yeah, I can see it going that way as well. With both teams having tired legs, I think it will be a 1-1 draw as well. Hopefully, it's not too boring. But luckily, there's other games on in the FA Cup. There's some quite good games on as well. Just before we close off the show, something big happened today. One of our key players signed a new contract, Benny White. Guys, what are your opinions on Benny White signing a new contract?
Personally, I'm delighted. I think the non-right back that's been playing excellent at right back, the one position he was good as a centre half and a centre mid, and Arteta's turned him into this right back. And of recent, since Zinni's been out and we had Kivior on the opposite side, an inverted right back as well. The guy doesn't even like football. He likes gardening. He's an utter professional. He's an absolute unsung hero of this Arsenal defence. And somebody, I think, was, I don't know if it was on Twitter or on our WhatsApp group, I think it might have been on, it might have been Lyle actually, and said it's reminiscent of an invincible in Ralphie Loren, in Loren, in the type of player he is. He's a quiet player. He's a gentleman. He does his job. And Gareth Southgate, I don't know what's gone on, but Gareth Southgate needs to grow a pair and just either tell the truth or, you know, be honest. Just be honest, because I don't know of a better right back and versatile defender in the league at the moment who's as fit as him that could be picked. So for me, I'm delighted that he doesn't matter. I hope for many, 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 many more years he's an Arsenal player.
I think he was always going to sign another contract. I think when you look at the Arsenal squad and you look at how they are together, you know that they're a team that want to play together, and they're all signing contracts. We're getting them all signed up, aren't we? Which is wonderful. As for Benny White, I really think it's about time we put this centre half playing right back bit to bed. You know, I think we can't keep on with that. He's proven himself as the best right back in the country. For me now, he's a right back that we could move into centre half if we needed him. Honestly, he's that good. But As for the England thing, I've not seen a lot of it today because I've been working all day, but I did pick up on social media that Southgate has put out a statement saying that, saying basically that Ben White doesn't want to play for England, which is fair enough, right? If that's what, if Ben White doesn't want to play for England, then Ben White doesn't want to play for England. But what Southgate does need to tell us, because Ben White won't, is why doesn't Ben White want to play for England? Why doesn't he want to play for England? I've got a feeling that the issue, and I can't be sure, obviously, I'm just speculating, but I'm speculating that the problem with Ben White lays in the England camp, not with Ben White, you know? So, yeah, Ben White might not want to play for England. But Southgate, you've taken an easy way out there with that statement. You've taken a real easy way out. Why doesn't Ben White want to play for England? Who are you putting in front of him in your England squad? Because you're missing a great talent.
Trev, they also came along and tried to spin it saying that the Arsenal camp had requested that he doesn't play for England or said he didn't want it. So they're trying to spin it, but the Arsenal camp have also come along and said, we're not making any comment. And that speaks volumes for me.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think, Dan?
I mean, I'm overlooking all of this and thinking, brilliant. We've got a right-back that is our starting right-back that doesn't have to go on international duty and has less chance of picking up injuries abroad. I'm over the moon. The only thing I'm disappointed for is him himself. If Ben White does want to play for England, he's not getting in the team. It's a shame. I mean, I can understand at times him not playing when you've got some top quality fullbacks that we've got in England team. I do think that's where we're blessed in England. But where they're all injured at the minute, you know, you're going to bring in Joe Gomez that can play there, or you're going to have someone like Ben White. He's been, in my opinion, one of the most consistent right backs the last 18 months. So there's obviously a problem there somewhere, but advantages. I only wish it was Saka that didn't have to go on international duty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It suits us down to the ground, doesn't it? So let's be selfish and let's, in a way, let's rejoice at the fact that Ben White isn't going to play for England. Now, listen, Alex, I've got to step on your toes here, young man, because I'm conscious that we've gone over an hour and a quarter when Fergus said to me, do not go over an hour. Do not go over an hour.
I think we may have overrun again.
I've just got to do this, Alex. See, I forgot I can't talk after I watched that. Where's Alex gone?
Don't know. I think I might have kicked him out by mistake. He'll be back. He'll be back.
Well, I hope he doesn't think that was that. So you should leave it to us. You're drunk. Leave it to us.
I'm not quite yet. The one thing I do want to say beforehand, that song is great. And that song keeps on getting picked up on by Facebook and YouTube for copyright. And hence why tonight we're on Twitter and on YouTube only, because Facebook have, again, blocked a third or fourth podcast for us. Let's get Alex back in. I'll text him. Go on. Listen. Yeah, I'm just saying to people, you know, we've got 290 people looking right now and watching us. Jump over to YouTube, click on the like and subscribe. I'm just delighted to see so many people watching us all the time, Trev.
Fergus, we were doing all this. You're meant to be away enjoying yourself. And by the way, you said you was getting your hair done. I can't see any different. Yeah,
I can't either.
We had nearly 300 people watching us tonight, all at the same time. It's stunning the way this has took off. And we talk about it off air, you know, when we're not on here, we all talk about it because we are genuinely mates that go to football. We're not mates that come onto a podcast and talk whatever comes into our heads. What we talk about is what we've seen, and we do it all together, you know, as a team of mates that go to the games. I'm blown away by people liking listening to me. My missus says to me, there's not 300 people on this planet that want to listen to you. Well, I've proved her wrong tonight. And I'm truly, truly humbled, Fergus, by the numbers. What do you reckon, Dan?
I'm going to say that we wouldn't have overrun if the Fergus 2.0 hadn't come back on. We was doing so well. It was running so smoothly. And Alex, poor old Alex, would have still been on the show. So,
and then sorry, I got kicked off.
Listen, do you know sorry what, Dan?
Rudeness, Alex,
you took the words out of my mouth, Dan. You took the words out of my mouth because I've got it all written out here. I knew Alex had an agenda, but I've got basic timings. And that's why I said to Alex just now, right, mate, we've done our time. And then Fergus, in his drunken state, goes and kicks Alex off the podcast. What are you playing at, Ferg?
I'm less drunk than I was earlier because when I spoke to you, very first of all, I hadn't eaten. And I since had a nice feed and a couple more drinks. But yeah, I'm sorry, Alex. Sorry.
Alex, we've just been talking about the amount of people that are watching us and the numbers and how truly grateful we are. How do you feel, mate?
Yeah, it's brilliant. And obviously, we say it quite often, but we don't do it for the money. We do it because we enjoy it and because we love Arsenal Football Club. So it's just a pleasure having all those people watching us. And it's brilliant meeting all you people as well. When I go to the games today, I saw Aaron that I stood next to in the stadium. He joined us in the podcast for the first time. So it's just brilliant connecting with all these people and seeing all those Arsenal fans.
Yeah, wonderful. Look. Right. I've looked for the last 5 minutes. I'm thinking we can't close the show because I can't find the outro music. I found the outro music, right? I think we should leave the last word. The last words, right, with our Irish leader. I don't know why I said that because he's done me head in tonight, but anywhere it's not required. But Ferg, last words with you, mate.
Up the Arsenal. Fuck the Spurs.
We're off. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Guns and Yellow Ribbons, an Arsenal podcast by Arsenal fans for Arsenal fans. Follow us on Facebook at Guns and Yellow Ribbons or Twitter at Guns and Ribbons, and remember to rate and review us too. Up the Arsenal.
I've got